Hello, everyone. Welcome to Mindship. The podcast is here to help you think critically about such things as God, the state of the church today, and the exploration of spirituality. I'm your host, Dr. Clint Haycock, coming to you once again from a freezingly cold day here on the Rock in North Wales, where we live. Been living here in the United Kingdom for 12 years now, and it's the best place in the world to live, even though the weather is oftentimes miserable. We love it here. Now, this is the first episode of 2018. When I started this podcast a year ago, almost now, back in February it was of 2017, I called it the Preacher's Forum Podcast. And really the aim of the whole podcast was all about providing resources to pastoral leaders, people in missional leadership positions in churches and church ministry. But as I've talked about in other podcasts and in some of my writings as well, I could no longer sustain that vision. I myself am in the process of deconstruction. I am in the process of discovering new things all the time, and I can't sustain that vision anymore. I can't be a part of propping up the evangelical Christian system, basically what the church has become, and we're seeing it more and more in North America, particularly in the realm of politics and religion, the intertwining of support for people like Roy Moore, Donald Trump, and all the rest of it. And I can't be a part of that anymore, whatever that means. If that means I no longer identify as a Christian because of these things, then so be it. That's the way it is. I am on the journey of deconstruction and discovery, and that's what I'm here to help you to do as well. So when I started this podcast, like I say, I didn't really know what I was doing. I just thought I want to get my stuff out there. I'd been made redundant from my teaching job. I'd been laid off, in other words, when the school ran out of money. And because I love teaching, I love critical thinking and helping people to do that, I started this podcast to do just that. But as I say, it's evolved over the year. In fact, there's been some amazing things that have happened. I'll share a couple of really cool things that have happened this year. Recently, I was asked to become a contributor on the Theology Corner blog, which you can find at theologycorner.net. You can see my posts as well as the posts of a lot of other contributors on there. There's some really great articles that have been written on there. And this is part of my journey. These are some of the cool things that are happening because of the fact that I've been getting my stuff out there in the form of this podcast, as well as some of the articles that I've written for my Preacher's Forum blog. So I'm really excited to see where the journey with the Theology Corner takes us. The second really cool thing that happened last year was a couple of months ago, I started a post-evangelical writers group on Facebook, and we've got about 85 members in it right now. We're adding more people all the time to it. And basically, I started as a support mechanism for writers or aspiring writers who want to be part of the discussion, who want to talk about their ideas in a safe space. So it's actually a closed group. So whatever we talk about in there is confidential and private. And if that sounds like something that interests you, if you're a writer or an aspiring writer who wants to get involved in the conversation or at least promote your work, look us up on Facebook and submit a request to join. As I say, it is a private group, so you have to submit a request to join, but I will let you in the group and you can become a part of the post-evangelical writers group. Hopefully this year too, we're going to be working on a book project. It's going to be a collaborative effort. So in other words, we're going to have a lot of the writers in the group contributing a chapter, and the subject of the book is going to be about the effects of the toxic theology within evangelical and fundamentalist churches on our personal lives, our relationships, our mental health. So if that sounds like something that you want to be involved in, we would love to have you in the group. So look us up on Facebook, the Post-Evangelical Writers Group. So this is all part of this journey, and I don't know where it's going to lead, but I'm excited to keep going down that road. In fact, that reminds me, speaking of the topic of toxic theology and how it affects people in the church today, I've just written an article on the Theology Corner Network, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes, about the recent sexual assault scandal that's come out, Pastor Andy Savage of High Point Church in Memphis, Tennessee, how the church handled the situation currently, how the church, when he was a youth pastor in Texas, how they handled it at the time. This was over 20 years ago now. And it's just amazing to me how the church is suffering once again in terms of public relation, how they're dealing with issues like sexual assault by clergy. And so if you want to read more about that, you can find my article on Theology Corner. I also do a lot of writing on my blog, which is found at preachersforum.com/blog. There's a lot more articles on there about deconstructing things like the topic of biblical inerrancy, which is a topic that Ray Guilford and I devoted a couple of podcasts to last year. And there's also some articles about leaving the church to find God. I do a lot of things on politics, looking at the religious right, the Christian support for Donald Trump, and other things like that. So take a look at my blog, preachersforum.com/blog, and I will talk about those as the year progresses as well. So in this pilot episode, I want to cover a couple of things, a couple of topics as we look forward to 2018. What sort of things can we look forward to from Mindshift? Well, coming next week is the first half of an interview that I did with David Madison. He is a former pastor who has now become an atheist, and he wrote a fascinating book called 10 Tough Problems in Christian Thought and Belief, A Minister Turned Atheist Shows Why You Should Ditch the Faith. So that's coming up next week, the first half of that episode. So that'll be a couple of weeks. Then we're going to completely turn a direction, and I'm going to bring you an interview that I did with Richard Jacobson. He's the author of a really popular best-selling book called Unchurching, Christianity Without Churchianity. So what we're going to do is we're going to go from an atheist to a person who really still defends the topic of the church, at least in his view of how he reads the Bible. So this is really the point then of doing this podcast, is to provide alternative points of view that you may or may not agree with, but that's fine because this is all about learning how to think critically, interacting with other alternative frames of reference. So we've got some great interviews lined up, some great interviews that I've already done that are waiting to be aired. So looking forward to what's coming out in 2018. And one more thing I'll just say, if you found the work of Mindshift or the Preacher's Forum blog helpful to you in your journey of deconstruction and discovery, maybe you can consider supporting what I'm doing. You can go to patreon.com/mindshiftpodcast and have a look at a video that I've just uploaded that talks a little bit about the vision of this podcast and why I'm doing what I'm doing, why I changed the name of the podcast from the Preacher's Forum now to Mindshift. So consider supporting my work for as little as $1 a month. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in other episodes coming up as well. All right, now that we've gotten some business out of the way, let's talk a little bit about this whole issue of deconstruction. You know, it's one thing to say, well, I've left the church behind. Maybe that describes you. Maybe you're a person who walked away from the mainstream church, what they call the institutional church, the evangelical, the fundamentalist church. Now, it's easy to say, well, there's a lot of people who have left the church. In fact, it's hard to track statistics. We don't actually know numbers, but we definitely know that according to a recent survey done by the Pew Group, we know that in 2016, they surveyed 35,000 American adults. And what they found is the population that identified themselves as Christians, that's an air quote, they had dropped significantly. The last time Pew looked at a similar survey, they did a similar survey in 2007. Okay, so 78.4% of those American adults identified themselves as Christian. Now, when they went back in 2016, that percentage had dropped to 70.6. And there's another interesting trend that's going on, at least in North America, and that is what they found is not only is America's Christian share of the population declining from 78% down to 70%, on the other hand, those who don't identify with any organized religion at all is also rising. And what we're seeing too, we've heard a lot of things. You've probably read some articles about the millennials who are walking away from churches. And I did a podcast on this, and I've written some articles about this, about why are people leaving churches. And what they're saying is, it's not about that I lost my faith so much. It's not about that I lost the church. Actually, the church lost me. They're not connecting with me. They're not talking about things that I'm interested in. They're talking about things like politics and money and abortion and homosexuality and building huge campuses and raising millions and millions of dollars, or in this country, millions of pounds to build massive campuses. And millennials are going, you know what? This is ridiculous. This is not about what I am. And so there's got to be more to the story, though, than this. It's hard to find statistics, okay, in actual percentages of people who've left the church, as we say. But there's a couple of aspects to this, okay? Why did people decide to walk away? And the second question is, okay, what happens next? So where do you go from there? Maybe you've left the church behind. And what I want to do is I want to list seven different possible groups of people who've left the church. Now, it's kind of a spectrum. Don't think of it as a hard and fast list. It's more of a spectrum. People who have left the church behind for a wide variety of reasons. And I want to give you this list of seven. And what I want you to do is I want you to find yourself on this list, on this spectrum. Does this describe you? In other words, as I read through the list of seven people or seven groups who have left the church. Okay, so there's no order to this, but I think it does kind of fall on a spectrum. So number one, there are people who've left the church. Okay, yes, for a wide variety of reasons. We don't know why they've left. It has to be massively nuanced and all that. But this group of people still identify themselves as Christians. They believe in God. They believe in Jesus. They accept the Bible, you know, as the Word of God, etc. So they're still very much Christians. It's just that they want to keep on doing church. They just want to do it in different ways, perhaps more of an organic form of church, maybe a house church or a church that meets in a pub or something, a less hierarchical form of church. And what you hear from this group is kind of an argument that says, you know, current forms of what they call institutional churches, they're doing it wrong. They're not doing church right as far as they understand their reading of scripture. And you're going to hear, I think, when we interview Richard Jacobson of the Unchurching book, this is kind of where he's coming from. So we're going to give Richard a chance to give his point of view in a few weeks. Okay, so number two are people who've left the church, again, for a wide variety of reasons. They still follow Jesus. They believe in God and the Bible, just like number one. It's just that this group doesn't desire to participate in any form of intentional church. Okay, they've left the church. They still identify as Christians. They just don't want to be involved anymore with the church. And I think this described me for a long time. I left the church. I believed in God. I believed in Jesus, but I didn't want anything to do with going back to any church, whether it was a house church or a pub church or whatever. Now, of course, why people walk away, we don't know, but you're going to have to supply your own reasons if you identify as either a number one or a number two. All right, so now we have number three. Now we've got people who have emotionally and maybe intellectually, they've left the organized church. Okay, they've switched off. They don't believe it anymore, but they still continue to attend every week or regularly. Why? Because their spouse, perhaps another family member, still wants to go to church. So they go along out of obligation. And I've got a good friend that I talked to just the other day who was in this exact situation. He switched off. He doesn't believe it. He doesn't buy into it anymore. But he's going because his partner still wants him to go to church. And they've got kids that are involved. So in other words, people like this, they're physically present. They're there at church perhaps every week regularly, but they are mentally checked out. They're switched off. They're going through the motions. They're only doing it to please someone else. And I hear a lot of people in this group and they feel like they've got to keep quiet. So they don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to out the fact that they don't buy into anymore what the church is doing. Okay. Maybe they're secretly deconstructing. They're questioning things. Maybe they've even become an atheist, but they just can't talk about it. They don't want to rock the boat. So people like this are in a tough place. I really feel for people who are kind of trapped. Okay. So now we have number four, group number four. Now, this is getting into a different category. This is sort of the hashtag church too, or the hashtag me too, or the hashtag silence is not spiritual group. Now, this group here describes people who haven't necessarily wanted to leave church. It's just that they have been forced out. They've been forced to quit church by those in leadership positions. Okay, here we're talking about church abuse, spiritual abuse, perhaps even sexual abuse, for example, or for other reasons. And a lot of the times you see people in this group, they're disaffected because of the abuse that they've suffered at the hands of leadership or those in authority or just people in the church. They've not abandoned the Christian faith. They still want to participate in fellowship. They want to find a church. But obviously, they've got major trust issues with people that are involved in church leadership. And of course, this is for good reason. So maybe this describes you. Of all the groups on my spectrum here, this group is the one that I feel the worst about. And I feel the worst for people in churches who have been abused, especially by clergy, by pastors, by priests. And all too often we see there's been a culture of suppressing these people and keeping the lid on it, covering things up. And in fact, this is something that I cover in my article about the recent scandal with Andy Savage and High Point Church. The victim talks about how she felt like she was breaking the code of silence that the church leadership at the time was enforcing because they allowed the situation to be covered up. They didn't inform the police. And so, you know, she's had struggles over the years, and you can understand why. So I feel sorry for this group of people who have been abused by clergy and church leadership. And I really hope then that this hashtag campaign, like the church too, and silence is not spiritual, will begin to blow the lid off of a lot of these things that these skeletons in the closet of people like Andy Savage and others out there who have tried to hide their past. All right, so let's move on. Let's cover now number 5 on the list. This is sort of switching gears now. Here we're talking about what I call ex-evangelicals. And of course, you've heard me talk before, if you listen to this podcast, about the ex-evangelical podcast, the ex-evangelical Facebook group that I'm a part of. And a lot of people fit into this category, what they call themselves ex-evangelicals or ex-evangelicals, people who have left the church and they're in the process of deconstructing their former faith. It's just that they don't know what to believe anymore. What I've found in this group, this number 5 group, most of these ex-evangelicals really have little or no desire to be part of an organized mainstream church, okay? There are some who still go to church in this ex-evangelical group. What we find, though, a lot of times they're looking for perhaps a more progressive, a more liberal, more inclusive church. They're still involved in church, but a lot of them are deconstructing their faith. They just don't know what to believe, and they're in this process. They're in this journey of discovery. Okay, so we have the last two categories. Number 6 are people who've left the church, but now significantly, these folks, they've gone beyond just deconstruction. They've given up on God. Or maybe this is the logical outcome of their deconstruction. They've become atheists. They've become agnostic. Okay, they don't identify anymore as a Christian. They've got no desire to go back to the faith. They've got no desire to participate in any form of church. They've walked away from the church as well as God. They are atheists or agnostics. So maybe that describes you. And then finally, we arrive at category number 7 on the list. Going to the end of the spectrum, we've got people who've left the church, but they've rejected specifically the Judeo-Christian God. Someone called it the Abrahamic God. It's not just about God, it's the Abrahamic God, specifically the God of the Bible, if you will. And what's interesting about this group is that even though they have rejected specifically that Judeo-Christian God, they're open, they're exploring, they're looking for new forms of spirituality. Maybe they're looking at other religions, not necessarily as a way to get to heaven in air quotes, but more like a life philosophy like Buddhism or something like that. So they've walked away specifically rejecting the Judeo-Christian God, not just God in general. Now, why would a person specifically reject the Judeo-Christian God? Now, this is just speculation on my part, but this is something that comes up in the conversation next week and the week after with David Madison. He keeps returning to the problem of evil. You have a good and loving God that's presented by Christianity, but if that's the case, why doesn't he do something about evil in the world, both natural evil, as it were, like hurricanes, tsunamis, floods, fires, people who die of famine and so forth, and evil people like Joseph Stalin, Adolf Hitler, serial killers? Why can't he stop school shootings, or why doesn't he? Doesn't he care? And so if you're going to go with that version of God, you've got some perhaps seemingly insurmountable problems that Christian theologians as well as Jewish rabbis have been wrestling with for hundreds, if not thousands of years. And so when you look at the depiction of God as presented in the Bible, you can come away with some pretty reprehensible pictures, to be frank, about this Judeo-Christian God. So people say, I don't want to have anything to do with that type of God that orders the slaughter of the innocents in the Old Testament, men, women, children, even the animals, when the Israelites were occupying the land of Canaan, for example. So this might be some of the reasons why people in this category feel like they need to reject specifically that Judeo-Christian God. All right, so that concludes my survey of this list of 7 groups, 7 different kinds of people along this list, or rather a spectrum, if you will. I'm interested to find out where you are on this scale. Do you identify with any of these things in your spiritual journey? Where are you at in terms of your own journey of deconstruction and discovery? I'd love to hear from you if you can identify in any way, shape, or form with any of those lists of number ones through seven. And if you think I should add more to that list, then by all means, contact me and let me know. And I'll talk about how you can get in touch with me in terms of social media at the end of this pilot episode. Now that I've concluded this survey, it's probably only fair for me to ask the same question of myself. Where am I personally at on this spectrum? Well, I think I started out as a number one. I was a Christian. I was very much involved in the church. I was in leadership. I was a pastor and an elder of a church for years and years in the States. I walked away from the church. I still believed in God. I still believed in the Bible. But then I started edging toward number two. All right. I said, you know what? I walk away from the church. I still very much identify as a Christian, but I don't want to go back. For a long time, we even were part of a church plant in Portland that was a very organic, less hierarchical church. We actually bought a house once we closed our church down in Portland. We used some of that money as a nonprofit to buy a house. We started a house church. It was great, you know, and that was a very organic, very non-hierarchical church. But, you know, I kind of soured on that too. And then I think I've moved to a number five. The more I deconstruct my own inherited belief system and the traditions and doctrines that I was taught in church, Bible college, and seminary, it's become to the point where I'm not sure what I actually do believe. I don't know what to believe anymore. And I might even be edging into number six. I'm not sure, becoming maybe an atheist, and I certainly don't want to go back to the church. I'm not sure where I'm at on the spectrum. And that's the whole point really of doing this podcast, I think, is to help you to think, okay, where am I at? And you don't have to be on the scale forever. You can move from point to point, position to position, because this is what it's all about. It's all about this journey of deconstruction, this journey of discovery. Now, speaking of deconstruction and discovery, there's another thing I want to talk about in this pilot episode, and this is another kind of model that might prove helpful to you in terms of your own journey of deconstruction and discovery. And this is something that I get into in the discussion with David Madison coming up next week. I came up with this model, this idea. Now, I want you to imagine a kernel, a seed, all right? So you've got a kernel, and then you've got the husk around the seed, all right, the layers around the seed. Now, in my model or metaphor, the analogy of this kernel and the husk, that represents two distinct aspects of this model that we can use to deconstruct or question the elements of what passes for Christianity as a religion or as a means of salvation that guarantees its followers the entrance to heaven. It gives you that golden ticket. So let's use this metaphor of a kernel and a husk, okay, a seed surrounded by layers and layers of wrappings. And there's two distinct parts to this issue. You've got the seed, of course, and the husk around the seed. Okay, so the seed, in my metaphor, represents what I call pure Christianity, in air quotes, okay? Now, when you start questioning that seed, you say, okay, now we need to question some things. Can we trust the Bible? Is it the authoritative word of God, as the fundamentalists and now evangelicals would have it? Is it inerrant, that is, without error in everything that it affirms, including science, geography, history, etc., infallible, that means trustworthy? Is it inspired by the Spirit so that the writers, you know, wrote everything without making a mistake and all the rest of it? That's the classic sort of evangelical fundamentalist position. Now, the very second that you start raising questions about the veracity of the Bible, this makes a lot of people really nervous. And therefore, you can see why the fundamentalists were so rabid to defend the Bible from the attacks of the liberals back in the 18th and 19th centuries, and why even today the evangelicals are really quite strong on this issue of the authority of the Bible. Because what happens is, the second you start to question the Bible, the trustworthiness of the Bible, the historicity, and so forth, it brings up a problem of, can we trust the words of Jesus? And what we see, as Hector Avalos said on one of my podcasts, he said, you know, everyone's co-opting Jesus for their own ends. We make him out whatever we want him to be, and this is true of God as well. Hector Avalos says, all God talk is self-referential. And he said, look, it's circular logic. God is X because I want him to be X. Jesus is X because I want him to be X. Okay. But what those statements actually do is they reveal more about the person who says them than reflecting an actual truth statement when you look at it and break it down and see it for what it is. A lot of times it honestly comes down to beyond circular logic. It's just wishful thinking. And I see this all the time on Twitter from Christians who post things about God is this, God is that, Jesus is this. So what do we end up with? Well, if you're on the more liberal, perhaps more inclusive end of the spectrum, you've got Jesus. He's like a hippie. He's a guru. He's a peace-loving pacifist. He never lifts a finger to hurt anybody. He's totally inclusive. He's loving. He's a Democrat. He's pro-LGBTQ. Of course, he's pro-women. He's pro everybody. He's kind of this wise sage, this teacher, Jesus. He loves everybody. He doesn't make any distinctions, no judgments at all. So that's kind of the Jesus that the more liberal progressive side have created. And of course, their argument in constructing this sort of Jesus is they say, well, that's the Jesus of the Gospels. And that should be the face of Christianity. That's how we should be as Christians too. Now, on the other hand, you've got the conservative side. You've got Jesus. He's a militant. You know, he's pro-military. He's pro-America. He's pro the troops. He's angry, perhaps even violent. And of course, he's a Republican. He's pro-gun. He's pro-NRA all the way. He's certainly judgmental. He's homophobic. He's non-inclusive. He's anti-abortion. And you can create virtually any variation of Jesus or God along that spectrum. And this is a really funny, ironic observation. Things have come full circle. Maybe the liberals back in the 19th and 20th century were onto something. Maybe they were on the right track. They were asking a lot of really important, searching, probing questions when it came to these issues of the Bible and Christianity. What they were trying to do is they were trying to synthesize their Christian faith with the findings of modern historical criticism and modern science. And they were trying to say, how can these two things be compatible? And they came up with a really interesting question. They said, is the historical Jesus, in other words, the actual man, let's say, who walked the earth, the person of Jesus, is he somehow different from the Jesus about whom we read in the Gospels? Okay, now that's a big question. And then, of course, that leads to another question. So if the historical Jesus is different from the Jesus we read about in the Gospels, if he's a construct, are the words attributed to that Jesus actually his genuine words? So in other words, did the Gospel writers actually record everything totally 100% accurately, faithfully, what Jesus said? And this is something that Hector Avalos talked about in our podcast. He asked, you know, how do you know for sure that the Gospel writers recorded everything that Jesus said, like the Sermon on the Mount or quite long statements from Jesus? And of course, there's different ones in the different Gospels. And, you know, evangelicals have twisted themselves into circles trying to harmonize the Gospels and everything to make sure that they all kind of say the same thing, even though they seem to represent Jesus from four different points of view. So this is the question. And if you say, well, are the words attributed to him his genuine words? Is the historical Jesus different than the Jesus that we read about in the Gospels? And this, of course, is why the fundamentalists accuse the liberals of going down a slippery slope. Because once you get to the place where you start asking those kind of questions, that starts leading you down a path. And that leads you to another question, which is this. If we start to question these things, are we safe constructing sort of a doctrine on that basis of the fact that maybe, just maybe, the Gospels are not as historically accurate or trustworthy as we may have been led to believe? And of course, then that leads into looking at Paul's theology. He seems to have sort of constructed an entire doctrinal position, a whole argument, a whole Pauline theology, what we would call, based on actually really very few commands, few statements of Jesus, personal knowledge of him for that matter. And Paul, you know, constantly throughout his ministry, he was being taken to task because people said, now, wait a minute. Hey, listen, Paul, you've got no authority as an apostle. You weren't even one of the disciples of Christ. You don't know him at all. You weren't one of the ones who was actually walking and talking with Jesus. You claim to have met him in a vision on the road to Damascus. So as far as authority as an apostle, basically, Paul, you've got nothing. And these accusations basically dogged Paul all of his ministry. Of course, the ironic thing about all these charges that were leveled against Paul was they were basically true. He was not one of the disciples of Jesus, and he doesn't seem to have a lot of intimate knowledge of who Jesus was and what he actually said in his teaching ministry. Paul doesn't really seem to know that much about the historical Jesus other than a few things. And if you read the writings of Paul, he rarely quotes directly from Jesus. He seems to have taken this sort of Jesus on the cross theology and constructed a whole theological system. And what we discover mostly in our evangelical churches today is that most of the sermons that you hear Sunday in, Sunday out are from the epistles of Paul. So what we have really is kind of a Pauline theology, a Pauline church. And so you see the whole thing starts to look like a house of cards. And of course, this is why I say the fundamentalists were so rabid to defend the Bible, because the liberals were questioning all these things. And the fundamentalists said, well, you've got a different gospel. You're not even Christians. You've abandoned the historic Christian faith. It's a different Jesus, a different gospel. And they sought to defend the Bible against the attacks of the liberals. So that's kind of the pure seed of Christianity. If you start to question some of those things, of course, a fundamentalist would say you're in serious trouble. Now let's move to the other part of the analogy, the other part of the metaphor, and that's the husk around the seed. We're dealing here with layers of tradition surrounding that seed or that kernel of pure Christianity. Again, of course, this is in air quotes. Now what we see when you look at church history, so many layers have been added in by the church, certainly the Roman Catholic Church, and then afterwards in the Reformation, by theologians, by scholars, by preachers, biblical scholars, and so forth. Over the centuries, what's happened? Christianity has become virtually unrecognizable from whatever it was that it started out to be in the first place, in the first century. And of course, even then you have to question that seed. So what do we have? What have been added in? What kind of things have been tacked on or wrapped around that seed? Well, things like doctrinal statements, creeds, church confessions, doctrines, fundamentals, whatever else you want to add in. And you've got to ask, now why are there thousands and thousands of different denominations? There's so many streams of tradition, each one of which somehow claims to be the true church, in air quotes, and each one's kind of looking down their doctrinally pure noses at all the other ones who clearly must have gotten it wrong. And what we see, going back again to this issue of the fundamentalists and the liberals, when we take a closer look at that time period when there was these big debates going on, when the fundamentalists were so keen to defend the Bible and Christianity against the attacks of the liberals, the strategy that the fundamentalists came up with was they used these creeds, confessions, and fundamentals in a twofold way. One, they used it as a shield, that is defensively, but they also were able to use it as a weapon offensively. So looking at, again, for example, this doctrine of inerrancy that really comes out of the late 19th and early 20th century as a fundamentalist doctrine to defend the Bible against the attacks of the liberals, as they called it, they could use it as a defensive shield. You know, they could say, well, no, we believe in inerrancy. We believe in the authority of the Bible. We're going to hide behind that shield and protect the Bible from the attacks of the liberals. But also they could use it as an offensive weapon. So if you were a fundamentalist, what you would ask somebody is you'd say, do you believe in inerrancy? Do you believe the Bible is inerrant? And if they said no, then you could label them as a heretic. You could label them as a liberal, and you could then go on the offensive and attack them. And so what we end up with is a sort of a twofold strategy. You can defend the church, the Bible, whatever, against attacks from without. And then in turn, you can also go on the offensive, and you can use the same dogma, the same doctrine to go on the offensive. And they absolutely did. The fundamentalists were very militant, and they would go out of their way to destroy people's careers professionally, as well as their lives and reputations in the public sector. And what strikes me about the whole thing is that when we step back and look at these debates, you got to realize that all doctrines, and this is something Stanley Gren said, the theologian, he said, all doctrines are historically and culturally conditioned. That means, in other words, the things that we've taken on board over the centuries within Christianity, when you look at them in terms of their historical and cultural context, most of them, in fact, all of them, arise from within a context. They're oftentimes a reaction against something else or someone else or another position. And so the very doctrines that the church today embraces as historic Christianity, again in air quotes, a lot of times when you trace it back far enough, you realize that it's actually just something that came out of a particular context, a particular historical situation. And so we have to question these things, okay? Is that pure seed, that kernel, is it as pure as we think it is? And all the layers of tradition, all the stuff that's been added in over the centuries have perhaps obscured whatever that pure seed was. And we hear a lot of people talk about, we need to go back to that church in the book of Acts, you know, the early chapters of the book of Acts, for example. That's one argument that, for example, Richard Jacobson might use to say, this is why the church of today has gotten it wrong. You see, we need to go back and focus on the basics, focus on taking care of people, focus on taking care of the orphans, the widows, healing people, giving money away. They didn't even have a building. They met in homes. They shared everything together. They shared everything in common. And where's the church today? We see the church building massive mega church buildings. We see huge campuses with gymnasiums and all the rest of it. And you wonder, people can't even pay their bills. People are losing their houses, their jobs, and yet the church is raising millions and millions of dollars or pounds or whatever to build a massive campus. And people are on the streets. People are losing their homes and jobs. And you have to wonder, what is going on? And so these are the things that we have to question. These are the things that I'm questioning. And what I want to do as the podcast rolls forward this year is I'm going to use these two models. I want to talk to my guests that I have on the show and kind of ask them, okay, where are you on this spectrum of 1 to 7? Maybe as the year goes along, we'll add more to that spectrum. We'll come up with more than just the 7. And I've gotten a lot of help from people on different Facebook groups to come up with more and more categories. So I'm very thankful for that community. And in a way, that's kind of become my church, the Exvangelical group on Facebook and the Mindshift podcast group and other kinds of groups, Love Heretic on Facebook and some of the other ones that I'm a part of, as well as now the Theology Corner Network, you know, meeting some really great people, dialoguing, throwing ideas around, and really being in a safe place to kind of discuss whatever is on your mind and where you're at in terms of your own journey. So as we wrap up this pilot episode, I hope that my discussion of these two kind of models has helped you to sort of think through where you're at in terms of your own journey. And, you know, as the old kind of cliche saying goes, I think there's a lot of truth to it, though. It's not so much about the destination. It becomes about the journey itself. So we're on this journey. We're walking. We're going somewhere. Where that is, we don't know at this point, but perhaps then the journey is more important than arriving at some destination itself. All right, so if you found this episode helpful at all, let me know. I'd love to hear from you. Where are you on that spectrum? Are you a 1 through 7? Where are you at? Have you moved from another point to another point on the scale? Where are you at? I've also written an article about this, and I will also put that in the show notes. You can have a closer look at that and find out about where you're at on the spectrum. Maybe it'll give you a chance to evaluate your own spiritual journey. So if you want to connect with me, you can do that on a variety of different social media platforms. The easiest way, perhaps, is just to send me an email, preachersforum@gmail.com, and I will respond to you. You can also follow me on Twitter @MindShift2018, and note that I've changed the name of that. I used to be @PreachersForum, but I am now @MindShift2018 on Twitter. You can also follow me on Instagram as well, and that is @MindShiftPodcast. And again, note that I've changed the name of that to MindShift Podcast. It used to be Preacher's Forum, but I'm looking to kind of get away from that and brand everything as the MindShift Podcast. So if you end up following me on Instagram, what you'll see there are a lot of pictures of the places that we travel. We love to go all over Europe and all over the United Kingdom, and I love taking pictures of different places where we go. And so you'll see a lot of that on Instagram as well. Finally, you can take a look at my Facebook page, which is found at facebook.com/mindshiftpodcast. And that's a good way to connect with me on Facebook as well. And finally, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, if you found the work of Mindshift at all helpful to you, you can help support me in the work that I'm doing. It helps me cover things like web hosting space, podcast hosting space, basically the monthly expenses that go into running and maintaining a podcast. So you can go to patreon.com/mindshiftpodcast. You can check out the video that I've just posted on Patreon. And again, it just describes a little bit about the vision behind why I started this podcast in the first place and this journey that I'm on that changed from the Preacher's Forum now to Mindshift. So take a look at that on Patreon. You can support me for as little as $1 a month and become a member of the Mindshift Podcast closed group on Facebook. And there's going to be some more rewards coming out this year for supporters in 2018. All right. Thanks for coming along with me on this journey, this pilot episode for Mindshift in 2018. Just a quick reminder, don't forget next Friday is the first half of the interview with David Madison, the pastor turned atheist who's going to try and convince you why you should ditch the faith. So don't miss that right here next Friday on Mindshift. Yeah.